Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Welcome to Strong Tower Radio, where we focus on character, community, and wholeness of life. I'm your host, Tom Majure. In the book of Genesis, we are reminded that the Creator placed humanity in a beautiful garden to care for it, cultivate it, and protect it. Here in the Great Lakes State, we are blessed with a breathtaking slice of that original design. From our rolling sand dunes to the vast, majestic waters of Lake Michigan. True Christian stewardship means recognizing that these natural wonders are not ours to abuse, but a sacred trust from God to preserve for generations to come. Join us today to talk about how we can enjoy safely, respect and protect these beautiful gifts, and specifically swimming safety as we use our beautiful beaches. With me is Pat Wallen. Pat is the Plainwell District Supervisor for the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, Parks and Recreation Division. Pat, welcome to Strong Tower Radio.
Thanks for having me today, Tom. And just a quick note, my last name is pronounced Whalen.
Whalen, all right, like the city Wayland. Very good.
But no D, that's me.
All right. And, you know, Pat, I think you have the most wonderful job in the whole world.
Yep, I absolutely agree. It's been a great career, and I've enjoyed all of my time with the department.
We haven't had much time to tell our listeners yet, but I understand that you've been running state parks along the Michigan lakeshore pretty much top to bottom. You have one of the wonders of the world. Our sand dunes along Lake Michigan is one of those rare things that only a few places on earth, and one of those is right here in Michigan.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been working for the Parks and Recreation Division for 36 seasons now. I started out as in 1990 as a summer ranger and been up and down the shoreline and into some parks in the UP.
Absolutely.
Now I've down in the Plainwell District.
Wow, that is just so awesome. We're going to be talking about swimming safety, but let's have a word of prayer. Our great Heavenly Father, we just want to thank you. I got so excited about talking about the outdoors, and many of us have enjoyed the parks at Warren Dunes, at Grand Haven, at Holland, Ludington, also many wonderful places. But we have to be safe. And Lord, be with us. Help us to have a fun but safe summer and learn some of the tips that Pat is going to share with us. In Jesus' name, amen. We love our Great Lakes, but they hold over one-fifth of the world's fresh water, means that they possess incredible power. What makes Lake Michigan currents uniquely hazardous compared to smaller inland lakes. Pat, what is the difference between swimming on Lake Michigan or our local swimming hole around our communities?
Yeah, well, Tom, Michigan has some really large inland lakes that may have some wind-driven or outlet currents. What they lack are the more dangerous currents we find in our Great Lakes. And those Great Lakes currents include structural currents, longshore currents, and the dangerous rip currents. Those rip currents form when waves break over a sandbar near the shoreline, and the water itself, its momentum gets trapped between the sandbar and the shore, and eventually that water that builds up does have to go somewhere, so the pressure is relieved, and the water returns back out into the lake through either a pre-existing rip channel or breaking a new rip channel through the sandbar. And that would be in a form of a rip current, which that is that narrow and powerful stream of water and sand moving away from shore. And then rip currents will not pull a swimmer underwater. Many people mistake them for an undertow, which we don't have in our lakes, but they'll actually carry them out into the open water away from shore. And really, a good rule to follow when you're caught in a rip current, they call it a flip, float, and follow method. And it means to flip on your back and keep your face out of the water and keep your breath, and then float to conserve your energy and remain calm, and then follow that current out until it weakens and you feel it release you. Once you feel that release of the current, then you swim parallel to the shoreline and then exit that current and swim back into shore. Sometimes you can allow the wave action bring you back into shore, but never try to swim back against that rip current. Even the strongest swimmers can't fight those rip currents in the Great Lakes. And then the other two I mentioned, the longshore currents that can move a swimmer up and down our beaches. These currents may become dangerous when combined with our rip currents, and they do have the potential to move swimmers, and most of the times that's little kids out in the water, up and down the shoreline, and then takes them unknowingly into the path of a rip current in other hazardous areas. And that last one being structural currents, and those are caused by either our natural or man-made structures, such as our piers and jetties that are nearby in some of our parks, and that deflects the longshore currents that kind of artificially cause an intense rip current, and those are all immediately adjacent to those structures.
Well, Pat, let me... there's a lot to think about, and if you look out on the beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline, it could be at Lake Huron or it could be in Lake Superior also, but you look out there and it just looks like a body of water. Sometimes it's very calm, and that's a surprising thing. It can almost be glass once a week or whatever. Other times it's a nice rolling little one. Sometimes it has a lot of energy and crashing waves, and if the water temperature's right and those waves are crashing, it can be pretty exciting to be out there swimming in that. Our danger increases as we do that, and then we have some severe weather that nobody should be out there, not even windsurfers, right?
That's correct, yeah. And at our beaches, when you experience those different wave conditions, each of our designated beaches along the Great Lakes and all the Great Lakes where we have state parks go by a flag system or a flag warning system. And that flags are used to indicate the potential for those adverse swimming conditions. Our parks assign employees to watch the waves and the water action. They have knowledge of from previous experience with the lakes. They gather information from the NOAA weather station, watch our beach hazard forecast, and they change those flags throughout the day. The flags we have are green, yellow, red, and a double red. The green being the lowest hazard. There's always hazards in the water. No water is ever completely safe. The green flag is a low hazard, so we've got the small 0 to 2 foot waves, and the lake is generally considered a lower normal risk, but there might still be some currents available. That would be then go up to a yellow flag, which we consider a medium hazard. The wave heights are 2 to 4 feet. Some of those currents are starting to show up along the shoreline. There might be strong offshore winds that might be present, so inflatable devices in the water may not be safe, especially if little kids. The red flag is considered a high hazard. Our waves are getting 4 to 5 feet in that range or higher. Lake conditions are considered to be high risk and dangerous. There's very strong longshore currents and rip currents. That red flag might also be used to notify visitors of contaminated water, such as E. coli as well. And then in the last few years, we developed a double red portion of that, a double red flag. Indicates a very high hazard, and water access is actually closed. So if you're on the beach, you can't enter the water from the state park. You can be on the beach, you can recreate, you can have fun. We just cannot enter the water, which our new land use order allows park staff to enforce that. So it might be out there for the waves, but they also might use it, like I mentioned, for contamination of the water. There might be unsafe debris in the water. There may be a rescue or recovery effort going on currently for a missing person. And then severe weather events might impact that as well. But the waves identified there would be in excess of 8 feet. So it's really getting up there. The people enjoy being out into that those waves, but they're very dangerous. Park staff will patrol the beach on those double red flag days and then seek to educate our visitors. But as a last resort, they do issue or can issue citations for disregarding that closure. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that there is one exception on those double red flag days, that visitors that are there for surfing, for windsurfing, those other board sports on the water, they are allowed to still go in on those double red flag days as long as they have the appropriate safety equipment like the board tethers, wetsuits, and life jackets.
Thank you for that very comprehensive discussion. There's a lot more to it than many of us realize, and thank you for sharing about the double red and about the surfers and stuff. But you also need to know your limits. These are general warnings. You can correct me if you wish, Pat. These flags, weather changes, and it's a general thing. You still have to use, like on the roads, if you slip off the roads, you were driving faster than you should have been driving, correct?
Right, and you said it right off. Know your limits before you go in the water. Swim with other people so someone knows where you're at. If you're there with kids, keep an eye on the kids. A lot of our beaches in the Plano District are extremely busy. We've got three of probably the top, seven or eight parks for visitation in this district.
Wow.
With Dunes Holland and Grand Haven. And oftentimes kids will wander away. The parents aren't paying attention. It's a mess trying to find the kids when it's a packed beach like that. And then it gets really scary when you add in the water aspect there. So another thing to think about this time of the year is, while we do have a lot of our swim buoys in and we're starting to fly those flags and display the lake conditions, that lake is still very cold. Lake Michigan itself, barely in the mid to high 50s right now, and you can easily become hypothermic if you spend too much time in the water. And those people that might choose to jump off from piers that are adjacent to our parks, if it's cold enough, there's things such as cold water shock when they hit the water, that their muscles may freeze up. They're not able to come to the top of the water and get that breath. So just being careful of the water temperatures as well. Some people may not think about that side of it.
We don't usually think about this, but the Parks Department at Grand Haven is going high tech. Tell our listeners about this system that you're developing. It's kind of cutting edge water safety. Tell our listeners about this.
Yeah, it is. It's a system we installed in 2024, and it was about a year process for the design on it, working with the manufacturer, and it's effectively decreased the response time for our incoming police, fire, EMTs, and park rangers by providing immediate notification to the Central Dispatch Authority when one of those eight life rings on the eight orange towers along Grand Haven State Park Beach are pulled. So when you pull a life ring, there's an immediate notification that's sent to park staff and to the dispatch. It's resulted in response times from our staff, and it's gotten down to a two-minute response time on some of the areas of the beach, depending on where staff are in the park. So going from the time it takes for somebody to call 911 to them dispatch it to our officers hearing that to responding, they're immediately getting that notification when those life rings are pulled, and they are notified in what area of the beach that those life rings are in. So those orange towers also house an LED light system that replaces the traditional flags that you're going to find at other Great Lakes State Park beaches. The green, yellow, and red, and then the double red lights, they clearly display what the color is for the day and the current lake condition. And there's also an automated chime that notifies visitors on the beach when those lake conditions change and the light colors change. So staff are monitoring conditions throughout the day. As those lake conditions change, that color will change as well, and the hazards that are present can change with that. In addition to the orange towers, there are four blue towers that house the high-power cameras with a direct feed to Ottawa County Central Dispatch that allow those dispatchers to determine exactly where the emergency is and which area of the beach that's occurring in. Those dispatchers can then accurately direct those incoming first responders to the correct location, reducing our response time. The blue towers also feature a push button that allows visitors to push it and speak with Central Dispatch and relay any emergency information. So not all emergencies on the beach are water-related, so we do have many medical-related emergencies. So you could either pull the life ring and we'll be notified that way, or use those blue towers and push the button, and that allows you to speak with Central Dispatch and relay what the emergency is. Those cameras have been very useful over the last couple of years and been used in many different missing children searches on the beach. Like I mentioned, that it gets packed on the beach, hard to see where they're at. So these towers are looking up from an elevated position and makes it a little bit easier to spot little kids walking around the beach. And then, like I said, they've been used during various missing person incidents as well. I believe only one water-related incident since they've been installed, but it worked very well.
That is so reassuring to know about that. Time is everything in drowning or distress situations, and you're cutting off time. People are able to respond quickly. There's no confusion. Who's going to call? You grab a ring, that's natural. That triggers the whole process. I think about this and swimming. We're going to move on to some other, talking about the state park and the opportunities there. But this swimming is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And there, Lake Michigan swimming is exciting and such. Safety is so important. And let me share with you folks, don't be overconfident. A person that I knew, I had met at Pentwater a number of years ago, they used to always swim across the Pentwater Channel from the South Pier to the North Pier. And one day, because of certain conditions or the tides, the water comes in or comes out. It goes both directions in that particular channel. One of the two, the father and son, the father drowned in that thing. He had done it for years, lived on that beach and did it, but it only takes one disaster to make an unpleasant event.
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. There's structures around that. There's rocks that are hidden that people can't see. It's actually illegal to swim in a channel of the navigable waterway. So if you're swimming the channel at Grand Haven or Pentwater, and you might get a visit from the Coast Guard.
Yes. Well, Pat, you're listening to Pat Wayland. He's with the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, Parks and Recreation Division. And I'm Tom Mazure, your host here on Strong Tower Radio. We will be back to talk more about our wonderful state parks.
This is Ruthie Calkins from Tustin. The Bible tells us that heaven will be the dwelling place of God's friends. That's why I'm so excited about supporting Strong Tower Radio. Their unique blend of thought-provoking speakers, stirring inspirational messages, and heartwarming music reaches into the lives and hearts of each listener, helping them to develop and cherish a friendship with God. If this radio station has been a blessing to you and your family, why not join me and hundreds of others in supporting Strong Tower Radio with a financial gift? They're 100% listener supported and could really use your help right now. You can send your check to Strong Tower Radio, Post Office Box 567, Cadillac, Michigan, 49601. Or you can visit their secure website to use your credit card at strongtowerradio.org. Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
You are listening to Strong Tower Radio. We are looking at swimming safety with Pat Wayland of the Michigan Department of Natural Resources Park and Recreations Division. And in this section, we're going to be talking about free access and family recreation at Michigan State Parks and Recreation Areas. I want to put a Bible text in here. In Mark chapter 6, Jesus invited his disciples to come aside into a deserted place and rest a while, unquote. Our Michigan State Parks provide that exact sanctuary, a place to unplug from a chaotic world and reconnect with our Creator through nature. God made these spaces for fellowship and renewal, and events like our upcoming 3 free weekends, making it possible for every family, regardless of their means, to experience that Sabbath rest in the great outdoors. And I must say that some of the most delightful, beautiful places to walk I can think of is walking the back beaches through the forested dunes of several of those Michigan State Park facilities, whether it be at Ludington or Warren Dunes, Hoffmeister State Park. Pat, I could keep on going.
Yeah, there's a lot of great places to go and see in Michigan, and the state parks are a fantastic place to start that with. You had mentioned earlier access into our parks and how we've got a free opportunity coming up. Michigan's 3 free weekend, which is coming up and will take place Saturday, June 13th, and Sunday, June 14th of this month here, coming up soon. That gives residents and out-of-state visitors a chance to enjoy fishing, off-road riding, and state park access without having to pay the fees. The free weekends include a free fishing weekend, so you can fish for all in-season species, all weekend without a license. We still have all of the normal fishing regulations still apply, so it's still regulations on limits of fish, but you don't have to have that license. And then included in that weekend is the free ORV weekend, or off-road vehicle weekend, where you can legally ride 4,000-plus miles of state-managed trails, routes, and Michigan scramble areas, such as Silver Lake Sand Dune, without an ORV license or trail permit. And finally, the biggest impact to us is the free state park entry. So on this weekend, no recreation passport is needed for the weekend for access, and that gives you access to 103 state parks and over 1,000 state-managed boating access sites where that fee is waived.
Well, Pat, I just want to do them all.
There's lots of places to see and go and do, and each location has its own special opportunities and things that you see, things you can do that they all offer, so each one's uniquely different.
And you know, Pat, my sister says, free is good.
Absolutely, yeah. Free is always good. We have just that one weekend. They do have a winter free weekend. I don't offhand recall the dates for that one, but it's sometime January, February. Kind of matches up with what we do in the summer. Allows people to get out and ice fish for the weekend, and then still allows that free entry into the state park. But we talk about our recreation passport, though, and when it's not needed on that weekend, the rest of the time throughout the year, it is a year-round pass to our Michigan State Parks and recreation areas and those boating sites. It grants motorized vehicle entry to all 103 state parks and recreation areas, 140-plus state forest campgrounds, which are primarily up in northern Michigan and the Upper Peninsula, like I mentioned before, nearly 1,000 boating access sites, along with thousands of miles of trails all year long. Our parks are largely self-supporting, meaning that we get our fees to operate from the recreation passport, from the camping fees, from other concession fees. We receive very little general fund tax dollars and have not received tax dollars for quite a good number of years since switching to the recreation passport. The funds coming from that passport go right back into maintaining and improving the parks, those boating sites, the trails, and the state forest campgrounds. They're also used, like I mentioned, the state parks and recreation areas, but those boat launches are historic sites within the state parks, our outdoor recreation facilities, and the opportunities they provide. And then the funds are also used, which a lot of people may not realize this, for local park improvements via the recreation passport grants. That's 10% of the funds that is generated from the recreation passport, which annually amounts to around $2 million, is awarded to local communities for park development and improvement projects. So it improves areas outside of state parks as well.
So, Pat, if I hear you correctly, it's almost like it's a helping upgrade without any fanfare, but helping overall across the state all recreation.
Absolutely. It reaches into those small communities that may have a lack of funds. They can apply through that recreation passport grant for those recreation improvements within their communities.
You know, personally, Pat, when they went to this passport system, they actually dropped the price of the sticker fees. And I kind of look at it now as it's almost like donating to a cause. There's almost like there's not an admission fee. There is, but it's just giving back. It, you know, that your dollar is improving the recreational opportunities, not only for yourself but for the community as a whole.
Yeah, and it's maintaining our parks for future generations. So you're enjoying the park, and the fees that you pay help maintain those parks and make sure that they're here for your kids and their kids and many generations down the road.
And I can say that I judge all parks systems from Michigan. That's the standard, the bellwether that I go. I've traveled some other states, and I sure appreciate the Michigan park system.
Yeah, it's so we often get comments, and not to discourage people from visiting other states, but we often get comments on the condition and what we offer and the cleanliness of our state parks. We won a national award for our state park systems a few years ago, so that's competing against all parks in the United States, and we won that award a few years ago. So it's great to be recognized for what we have here in the state.
Now, Pat, you have the Plainwell District, and Grand Haven is part of that. Grand Haven is one of those top few parks that are highly attended, and many, many people know about them. But what are some of the lesser-known parks and recreation areas within your district that makes a beautiful family day, or maybe when those other parks are at their peak season, you may want to find these little gems?
Yeah, there's a couple that are sometimes overlooked, and I some people may automatically think about Saugatuck Dunes, but that's getting to be a very busy place. But if you look outside of that, Grand Mere State Park, which is just south of St. Joe, it's managed out of Warren Dunes State Park, offers hiking and then Lake Michigan access through the trail system. It's not drive in and park and you're at the beach. You have to hike through the dunes to get to the beach. But with that hike, there's fewer people that attempt that, so it's much less populated than, say, a Holland or a Warren Dunes or Grand Haven when you get to the beach. Bass River Recreation Area in Ottawa County provides equestrian and mountain biking trails along with a boat launch into the and access into the bayou and onto the Grand River. Lots of opportunities out there. That recreation area is open to hunting. And then inland recreation areas that may not be as busy as our lakeshore parks like Yankee Springs and Fort Custer, still busy in their own bit, but they are much larger usually in acreage and a lot more room to spread out and to get a quieter visitor experience on many of the lakes and trails they offer at those two locations.
Definitely. I've been to both. I remember when Fort Custer was opened up, and it has grown quite a bit since then, but it definitely has an open field and you can do some bird watching. It's a very, very pleasant, I can attest myself, it's a very pleasant place.
Yep.
Yes, it's just amazing. You know, there's other ones that's outside of your district. There's one over by Lansing. I'm drawing a blank on the name of it, but there are some beautiful.
Sleepy Hollow, maybe?
What's that?
Sleepy Hollow State Park?
Yes,
maybe?
It is. Yes, yes.
Yep, fantastic park to go to, and it's not too far outside of Lansing.
Absolutely. What other parks might you kind of look down your list and share a little bit about the parks that you have in the Plainwell District? You go all the way from Warren Dunes, which is right down there in the southwestern Michigan, all the way up, you're just shy of Ludington, I believe, correct?
I'm actually a little bit south of that. So
okay.
I start at Warren Dunes at the state line and extends up all the way up the shoreline to Muskegon and Duck Lake State Park in Muskegon County. The further north you go, the next one north is Silver Lake State Park, and that's in another district. But the parks in the district, like I mentioned, Warren Dunes up to Duck Lake, across to Yankee Springs and Fort Custer. We've got 140-plus boating access sites in this district. A lot of those hidden gems we talked about, another one being Warren Woods down by Warren Dunes. Duck Lake is one of those hidden gems as well that kind of an unassuming just a day use park. There's no camping there. When I say just a day use park, it's got a lot to offer still. It's got an inland lake on Duck Lake and then a channel that goes out into Lake Michigan that it remains much warmer during the summer season than Lake Michigan is, so it's very popular with the visitors and little kids there.
What are go ahead.
The district itself sees approximately 10 million people in a year, so we're very busy.
Absolutely. What activities can you do at a Michigan State Park?
Well, it just depends on what they have to offer there. I mean, if they've got campgrounds, obviously we've got modern, we've got semi-modern camping, we've got group camp areas, we've got trails, we've got equestrian trails, we've got mountain biking trails. Some people may not realize, Warren Dunes allows by permit people to go up to the top of their highest dune, and people hang glide off from Warren Dunes. They go up there to the top of the dune, they catch the air and the currents, the wind currents coming off the lake, keep them afloat, and they fly around up there. But we've got outdoor facilities. We've got visitor centers at Hoffmaster State Park that was just done onto the American Rescue Plan Act. So it's been remodeled inside. A lot of our parks have seen some funding for the American Rescue Plan Act, and the district, we had over $20 million put into all of the parks combined. And we're just kind of wrapping up that up now with Van Buren State Park and then Muskegon State Park to finish off their beach building. But lots of improvements in the last few years.
Can you really see Chicago from the top of Warren Dunes?
On a clear day, you can see the towers, or you can see some of the larger buildings in Chicago, yes. Has to be just right to see it, though.
All right. We thought we did, but we weren't quite sure.
Yep. Sometimes it forms a bit of a mirage out there, but there are times that you can see across to Chicago.
What about the reservation system that was implemented couple decades ago, I would assume. How does that work just simply for camping, and are there other registrations besides?
Yeah, you can. Reservations are required for the parks, and they're actually. You can show up in case we had some sites that are not reserved. But after COVID, during COVID, the visitation exploded. We were the only game in town, so a lot of people have never camped before came out to explore that. Started camping and they've stayed with us. Our numbers have stayed up, so reservations are can be hard to come by, especially on those peak holiday weekends. But you can reserve through a 1-800 number. It's 1-800-44-PARKS, P-A-R-K-S, or through if you do a search for Michigan Department of Natural Resources camping, that will link you to the reservation system as well.
Strong Tower Radio cares deeply about making sure everyone can enjoy God's creation. What steps has the Parks and Recreation Division taken to make West Michigan beaches and trails accessible to individuals with physical or disabilities or mobility challenges?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tom. The Michigan DNR prioritizes making outdoor recreation inclusive for all of our visitors. The state parks, the campgrounds, the boating access sites, trails, and state game areas feature accessible amenities, such as motorized track chairs, which we're seeing a lot more of in the parks, accessible walkways, boardwalks, beach mats that go down on Lake Michigan beaches to make it easier to traverse down to the water's edge, specially designed beach wheelchairs are available in the Plainwell District at many of the parks that can navigate sand and shallow water. And then over 30 state parks in Michigan provide accessible fishing piers. And several parks offer accessible hunting blinds and special hunting opportunities for visitors with disabilities. In Plainwell, Yankee Springs Recreation Area recently replaced a new accessible fishing pier in their day use that is extremely popular. We have what's called a specially adapted enchroma lenses. They're kind of a knife, like a set of binoculars that you can look through that help people who have red-green color blindness to see color more clearly, and are currently available at several Michigan State Parks and will be coming soon to Grand Haven and Muskegon State Parks in the Plainwell District. Muskegon also recently reopened an accessible fishing pier, or remodeled it, I should say, at their Snug Harbor location. And then finally, those track chairs that I mentioned to assist with mobility are available at Fort Custer, Grand Haven, Hoffmaster, Holland, Muskegon, and Warren Dunes, and will soon be available at Yankee Springs and Van Buren. So lots of opportunities to get people out and get them onto the trails. Those track chairs are electrical. They have batteries, so they're battery operated. Go onto the beaches and onto the trails and get people out and enjoying the space that we have.
Well, listeners, we've been hearing Pat Wayland. He's with the Michigan Department of Natural Resources Parks and Recreation Division. We talked about swimming safety in the first segment. This is the last one about free access weekends and family recreation. Next, we're going to talk about stewardship of our parks. Stay tuned. I'm your host, Tom Mazur. We'll be right back after this break.
Hi, folks. Jelaine Fenner here. We are definitely living in uncertain times, and for some of us, it's scary. Signs of the times are everywhere. Jesus is coming back soon. Read Revelation chapter 22. Jesus says, "Surely I am coming quickly." We at Strong Tower Radio have a free book for you called The Great Controversy. Go to the back of the book and read chapters 35 to 42. It'll help you understand the times we're living in and what's ahead. This book even has 800 historical quotes and 1,200 Bible quotes. I love this book. Call Strong Tower Radio today, 231-468-2087, and ask for The Great Controversy while supplies last. And if we don't answer, please leave a message asking for The Great Controversy with your name, address, and phone number. That's 231-468-2087. On Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
You are listening to Strong Tower Radio. Today we are looking at three topics, with the Michigan Department of Natural Resources Parks and Recreation Division, Pat Wayland. Welcome back, Pat.
Thanks, Tom.
I've really appreciated we've talked about the importance of swimming safety, whether it's on the Great Lakes and inland lakes or wherever you're at. We talked about that in the first segment. It was exciting to hear about the Grand Haven, the cutting-edge techno beach that you have there with notifications within 2 minutes of if a life ring is pulled. Immediately signals go out to the staff and to the local public safety divisions, and there's also cameras out there that can help find lost children and stuff. Just super. And then we talked about in the last section about the free weekends, and we talked about what a wonderful the parks and the resources that are available there. We're going to talk about leaving no trace. So the scriptures remind us that the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. When we walk through a fragile dune ecospace or hiking a wooded trail, we are walking on holy ground. True stewardship means leaving these places and spaces exactly as God designed them. When we stay on designated trails or protect native plants, we are directly participating in preservation of God's handiwork. Now, Pat, your job requires a delicate balance of encouraging literally thousands of people to enjoy the parks while simultaneously protecting the fragile dune ecosystem. How does the DNR manage that tension?
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, we often say that our visitors are loving our parks to death, so we really try that balance out there. Our mission is really twofold, and that is to provide those opportunities for people to come and enjoy Michigan's incredible natural resources that we have, while ensuring that those resources remain healthy for future generations. In those dune ecosystems that you mentioned, that means carefully balancing access with protection. And really to manage that tension, we use a combination of education, infrastructure, and stewardship. We direct visitors onto designated trails, boardwalks, and viewing areas that allow people to experience the dunes while still minimizing the impacts on those sensitive habitats. We post signage explaining why staying on trails matters, and we work with volunteers, local communities, and conservation partners to help visitors understand the ecological importance of those areas that they're visiting. We also monitor environmental conditions and visitor use. So in certain areas where we get high use, where impacts become significant, we may restore those damaged areas. We might install protective barriers. We might reroute trails or limit access to a particularly sensitive section of the dune or the park. And those decisions are really based on science and long-term resource management goals that are held within our general management plans for each one of our state parks and recreation areas.
Now, Pat, I really want to flesh this out to make it real to our listeners. I've observed people who walk off those trails, even though there's signage and pathways, and they kind of smugly either say verbally or almost self-consciously, it doesn't matter. Can you help explain, people walk across it and I didn't tear anything up, I didn't ruin anything. Please help our listeners understand that we all share this privilege and responsibility.
Yeah, and that's a frustrating part of our job is when this happens, we create what are called spur trails that are off-mark designated trails that kind of encourages people to wander off trail, off the designated area, and get off and follow where somebody else went. So while Michigan dunes are very beautiful, they're also very fragile. The plants that stabilize the sand can take years to establish. And a single season of heavy foot traffic can damage vegetation that can accelerate erosion and disrupt wildlife habitat. At the same time, these landscapes are among the most sought after recreational destinations that we have in the state and our state parks. One of the most significant consequences is the loss of that native vegetation. Many dune plants have, they've got deep root systems that help hold the sand in place. And when people walk through these protected areas, those plants can be trampled and destroyed, leaving the sand exposed to the wind and water erosion. Once that process starts or begins, dunes can become unstable and much more difficult to restore. The challenge is that dune recovery happens much more slowly than the damage does. A shortcut through a protected area may only take a few minutes to create, but restoring that vegetation and the dune structure can take many years or in some cases even decades. That's why designated trails, our boardwalks, our protected zones are some very important. That they aren't meant to limit the enjoyment of the coastline or the dunes. They're designed to ensure that these unique areas and landscapes remain healthy and resilient and accessible for all of our future generations of park visitors.
Pat, just to flesh that out even further, that walking on these dunes in certain places that are fragile, this is a very harsh environment. There's not much nutrition. Water is limited, or if there is water, it wicks away very quickly. And so repair is a very slow process, but also that dune blowouts, if it's on the windward side and you walk a trail up through there, you damage that. During one windstorm, I could assume that, you have strong high winds coming off of Lake Michigan can erode that, open that up, make a blowout out of a place that somebody on a nice, warm, gentle day walked across and compromise that space. Is that pretty close to a description of what happens?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. A lot of our dunes are what we call living dunes. So they're constantly moving. They're moving with the wind, with the weather. How many feet they can move each year, I don't know, but it's a moving dune, a moving system. And yeah, once we lose that dune grass, it takes a long time to recover. We will sometimes go in and replant dune grass and try to revegetate areas. We'll put up what's called a snow fence that captures fence. We might try stacking natural debris to recreate that some of that fore dune or the dune that was blown out, but it's never a slow process. But it also opens it up for invasive species when all those native plants are taken out.
Pat, let's turn a corner and look at invasive species threats. From a park management perspective, what is the biggest invasive species threat that's currently facing West Michigan parks, and what can campers do to keep from spreading those invasives?
Yeah, and it seems like we find something new every year, unfortunately, but invasive species are one of the most significant long-term threats to Michigan's parks and natural areas because they can alter that ecosystem. They can outcompete native plants and animals. They can be extremely difficult and costly to control once they are established. In West Michigan and the Plainville District, some of the most concerning things in the invasive species we have things like Japanese knotweed, Phragmites, garlic mustard. And you've got aquatic invasives such as the zebra mussel and Eurasian water milfoils. Can also affect our lakes and waterways through the region. Visitors can help with the prevention of transporting those aquatic invasives by using the process that we have at a lot of our boating sites called clean, drain, dry for their boats and trailers, meaning making sure both are cleaned of all attached weeds before entering a new lake or going or leaving that lake or transporting to a new one. Draining their live wells of water that you've brought in from one lake before you move on to the next will also help reduce that aquatic invasive species transfer. Many of the parks in Plainwell spend a great deal of time managing oak wilt, which has been with us now for way well over 10 years in the district, and it keeps bouncing around. It seems like we can never get rid of it. Hemlock woolly adelgid is another invasive that has been found in the park, much unfortunately, up and down the shoreline. And one of the simplest and most important things campers can do is follow a firewood rule of buy it where you burn it, meaning don't transport firewood between locations or from home. Buy it when you get to the location you're coming to camp. Moving firewood from one area to another can very unintentionally transport invasive insects, diseases, and their larvae that are hidden beneath the bark. Somebody might look at a pile of wood that's in their backyard and it looks perfectly healthy, when in fact it can carry pests capable of infesting in entirely new forests. So transporting those pieces of wood, unfortunately, is infecting some of our areas that previously didn't have problems. But in aquatic invasive species and those other land-based invasives are a challenge for just about every park system.
Just talking about invasive species, Strong Tower Radio has recorded over 500 programs, and some of them include invasive species. We have one on the zebra mussels and other ones. We've also bought the Phragmites. If I'm not mistaken, that is kind of looks like a tall milkweed, not milkweed, but cattail, but it has a different top, kind of a wheat top on it. That's seen a lot on the eastern side of the state, but I'm sure it's migrating our way too.
Yeah, unfortunately, there is a native Phragmites, but there is the non-native invasive Phragmites that we're working on. But again, yeah, it looks like the tall cattails you might see, but has a different appearance than those.
Yeah, it's so bad over on the eastern, like Lake St. Clair. I did an interview on that, and there was a person who lived along Lake St. Clair, and there was 100 or 2 feet between it, and some of the kids didn't even know there was a lake. Lake St. Clair was just a couple hundred feet because it was so thick they could not see the lake from the lot that they lived on. What about getting involved? If our listeners want to give back to these spaces, what volunteer opportunities exist within the Parks and Recreation Division?
Yeah, there's all kinds of opportunities, from being a host camper to working with our stewardship crew. We've got lots of friends groups in our state parks, but one of the bigger ones we have for stewardship, the Michigan DNR offers public volunteer stewardship work days. Those are year-round available days. They focus on protecting and restoring Southern Michigan's native ecosystems, and these events are open to individuals or groups or organizations. If you want to have an outing with your organization and your employees, you can register online or by contacting the relevant DNR stewardship coordinator. In Plainwell District, Tyler is our stewardship coordinator, and if there's interest, they can reach out to just about any of the parks in Plainwell, and they can direct you over to Tyler to help schedule that time with her.
What about, just real quickly, about the park host? How do people get involved in that?
So if you, I'll see if I can find the link for it, but really if you do a search for Michigan DNR Parks and Recreation Division host campers or volunteer opportunities, that's going to pop up. So our host campers stay on a designated campsite within our parks. And not all of the parks have host campers, but most of them do. Some of them have are large enough to have two sets of hosts, but they provide a certain number of hours of volunteer hours during the week. That might be doing crafts with the kids. It might be helping picking up litter around the park, cleaning fire rings, anything you can imagine, help directing people through our sanitation stations on those busy days.
Mm-hmm.
But they, for that those hours that they work, they have free camping, which most of our sites are a full hookup site. By this time of the year, we're looking at June 4th today. Most of those are likely going to be filled, but I'm sure there's some openings out there. Maybe some of our northern parks are in the UP that don't fill up. That's a great opportunity to give back and be part of the camping experience and provide services to your other campers in the area.
Oh, and there's some wonderful hosts that we look forward to seeing every year at some of our favorite campgrounds.
There is. There's some very passionate hosts out there that really enjoy camping and really enjoy talking with people and working with the kids.
Pat, as we wind up the program, what things can you give to our listeners that they can get further information from what we've talked about today?
Yeah, so we talked about beach safety first there, and if they're looking for real-time conditions, follow your favorite Start State Park on social media. Many of the parks post daily beach conditions along with their wave height and water temp. And if they don't have a social media site, call the park directly. And those parks along Lake Michigan also post beach conditions at the NOAA website daily during the swimming season. So there's opportunities there. If they want to look further into our beach safety, search for michigan.gov/beach safety. We'll bring them to the site and give them additional information. Recreation passport, if they do a search for Michigan DNR recreation passport, they can see how that works, see the fees for those and how those are structured and where they can get them. They can register their vehicle when they register their license plate and get the passport added back on. And then camping reservations, mentioned that 1-800-44-PARKS, but they can also go to midnrreservations.com and place their reservation there.
What a powerful reminder that our parks are not just a place for recreation, but spaces for reflection where we can marvel at the wisdoms of our Creator. By respecting the beach warning signs, staying on the designated dune paths, and keeping these waters clean, we honor the one who entrusts these beautiful elements to our care. I want to thank you again, Pat, with the Plainwell District Supervisor for the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, Parks and Recreation, for your leadership and for sharing these safety tips and stewardship updates with us. Thank you so much, Pat.
Great. Thank you, Tom, for having me on.
Thank you for your service and keeping our parks safe and beautiful. For Strong Tower Radio, I'm your host, Tom Majeure. God bless. Bye now.